Yevamos, Perik Dalad, Mishnah Base, 4:2, and the second of the two Mishnayos dealing with this question about the woman who's pregnant at the time that her husband dies. So here we're going to talk in Mishnah Base about if the living brother-in-law performs Yibum, so they get married and they sleep together. Now, there's an Isser D'Oraisa, an Isser Karis, of sleeping with your brother's wife. That, of course, we know is suspended in the context where there's a proper yibum to be performed. But if there's no yibum to be performed, and if the woman ends up being pregnant and having a child from her first husband, even though the husband is dead, so there's no yibum to be performed, so then the act of yibum itself is an issur d'oraisa for which one is liable to kares and has to bring a chatas. So our mission is going to say what happens if the woman were pregnant at the time they performed yibum. Now, again, remember midrabbanan, they're not supposed to get married for 3 months. So hopefully that will obviate the fact that they that this could happen. But first of all, maybe they didn't wait 3 months. In which case, let's talk about that case first. What would happen is that she now, after she gives birth, we will determine retroactively if that original yibum was permitted or not. If it turns out she gives birth to something which is a nafil, not a viable child, then anyways, she was obligated to yibum. The yibum turns out to be okay and everything's going to be okay in retrospect. But if it turns out that she gives birth to a viable child, then retroactively we see that the original Yibum was forbidden under Issacharis, because it's his late brother's wife, and therefore they'd be on the hook to bring a chatas. Each one brings a chatas offering to atone for a crime like this, which is subject to the penalty of Karis. Now, in case you are going to wonder, wait a second, the rules of bringing a chatas require that you had to act b'shogeg, you had to be negligent but not willful in your sin. So that's what's happening here, right? The Yavam never intended to do an Avera, even though the rabbi said not to get married for 3 months, and he did anyways, so he's over the Rabbanan, but really he's not mazed in his being with this woman, because he thought it was permitted. So therefore he'll bring, and she'll bring also, a chatas. By the way, if he waits more than 3 months, as he's supposed to, and then he marries her, and then let's say a month after they get married after 4 months. Then a month after they get to Yibum, they're married. She gives birth to a baby, like in the first month, a month after their wedding, and let's call it 5 months after the death of her late husband. So it'll turn out, wow, that means that actually she was pregnant all along. But more than that, of course, it's ascribed to the first husband because it's 5 months since he died. But then, in such a scenario, it will turn out that although she was exempt from Yibum, and they have to separate and get divorced, or whatever, they have to, not even divorced, they undo, the marriage is undone, and they can't stay together, but there no chatas would be required, because that's not even considered a shogeg, that's not considered being negligent, that's called an onus, circumstances totally beyond your control. You married a woman after 3 months, you thought everything was hunky-dory, you thought you were doing a mitzvah, turns out it wasn't, so then, okay, again, you have to separate, but there'll be no obligation to bring a chatas because you were an onus, not a shogeg, circumstances beyond your control, and not actual negligence. Of course, if after that you're with the woman, then it would be a good old-fashioned mazed, and also no chatas brought, because you're not entitled to bring a chatas if you act intentionally the mazed. Okay, so here the Mishnah says, Hakones es yevimto, if a person takes in his yevam, meaning he sleeps with her, the sister-in-law, v'nimtzes mu'uberes, and it turns out she actually was pregnant, v'yalada, and she gives birth to a child. So then it depends. B'zman shavlad shel kayama, in the event that the child that's born is a viable child, so then that means that the yibum should have never taken place, which means that the act of intercourse they had is iser kares, chayef chatas, and therefore, first of all, yotzi, immediately they have to get, I'll call it unmarried. There's no get required and no chalitza required, something like that, because none of that was ever relevant. They were never married, they were never anything. They have to just separate. V'chayavim b'korban, and they each, both he and she, are obligated to bring a korban chatas for their sin of being negligent and having intercourse with the erev that's a chiyav karis. On the flip side, v'im ein havlad shel kayama, if she's pregnant and she gives birth, but that child is not a viable child, either it's born dead or almost dead, not taken the full term, and then it dies within those 30 days. So then, yikayem, he, the yava, may keep her, meaning they stay married. Because it turns out retroactively that she was obliged to do yibum with him, and they did yibum, and they're married, so they can stay married happily ever after. The child, you know, made a big question mark over a while, but since the child was not born as a viable child, they stay married and happily ever after. Now, there's a big what if, however. What happens if you're not sure to whom this child belongs? So in Chazal's mind, their babies kind of come in two flavors. They come in the 7-month variety and the 9-month variety, meaning there's such a thing as a child being full term after 7 months. To the best of my knowledge, and I looked around and asked around, this isn't a phenomenon that's existing today. Every doctor, GBOIN, et cetera, who I've spoken with says every day that the child stays in utero, the better. And an 8 month is definitely, 8 months of gestation is definitely an advantage over 7 months of gestation, essentially without exception. But whatever the case is, Chazal understood that there's such a thing as a seven months of gestation, which is full term. And therefore, let's say they get married, let's say they do Yibum 3 months in the third month after the death of the first husband, and there's a child born 7 months later, and then we're not sure if this child belongs to, it's a 7-month healthy baby that belongs to the second brother, or it's a 9-month healthy baby that belongs to the first brother. So now we're really in a question mark, a quandary, whether the Yibum was legitimate and the marriage is legitimate, or whether it was totally illegitimate. There was no obligation for Yibum, and the whole marriage Yibum act was an avir and a chiv karas. So let's play it out. It says the Mishnah, Im ein avlaj, excuse me, Safek ben teisha l'rishon, Safek ben shiva l'achron. If the child is born, and we're just not sure, is it a 9-month baby that was sired by the first brother, or is it a 7-month baby which was sired by the second brother? So first of all, yotzi. They can't stay married because there's a chance, a real chance, that the yibum was illegal, that the original first husband brother has an offspring child through this baby, and therefore they can't stay married. But on the other side of the coin, it's possible that their yibum was totally legitimate, because this child belongs to the second husband. So therefore, when they get separated here, they have to do a get, misafik. They'll do a get, a dubious get, a get based on the question of maybe the yibum was legitimate, the child is the second brother's, and therefore they need to, for her to be married to somebody else, a get is required. So it'll be a get misafik. V'havlad kosher. Now the child himself, or herself, will be kosher, meaning not a mamzer, because there are only two possibilities, and both possibilities point to him being kosher. Possibility A, he is the offspring of his mother and her first husband, and they were happily married till the first husband died. So this is a child from that happy kosher marriage. The child's not a mamzer. Alternatively, he is the offspring of the second brother who did yibum, and if he's not belongs to the first brother, which means that the yibum was legitimate, required yibum. So he's the offspring of an active yibum, which is totally legitimate. So he's either way kosher. So even though the marriage is dubious, but the offspring is certainly kosher. V'chayavin ba'ashem talui. Something else now. Now, as far as the chatas goes of bringing a sin offering for having done this illegal act of yibum, perhaps, if it turns out that she wasn't obligated in the first place. So now we can't bring that. We can't bring that chatas, that sin offering. Why? Because you only can bring a chatas if you, not just if you're a b'shogeg, like I said before, but also if you are certain that you did the crime, just you were negligent in b'shogeg when you did it. So in this case, we're not sure whether there was a crime done or not. Maybe the yibum was legitimate, and maybe it was illegal. If it was illegal, they have to bring a chatas. If it was legitimate, they have to bring nothing. And since you can't bring a chatas if you're not sure, you won't bring a chatas. However, there's another korban called the asham talui. There are actually six different kinds of ashamos, guilt offerings. This one is very peculiar, the asham talui, the sixth one, which is that it's a suspending guilt offering, which means it suspends the consequences that have to be addressed by bringing a chatas. So that means the black spot on your soul that exists when you do a chiyuv karas, which can be cleansed through a chatas, that black spot will be addressed by bringing an asham tali, and the relationship will be reinstated between you and Hashem. No black spot anymore. So it suspends the consequences. Let me just clarify. It doesn't actually remove the obligation to bring a chatas. So let's say, for example, if after the fact it was somehow confirmed that the child, in our scenario here, that the child really belonged to the first husband, and therefore the marriage was illegal, and therefore the Yavam did an Isser Karas, and therefore he had to bring a Chatas. So even though he brought a Asham Tali previously, now that he learned he actually has to bring a Chatas, he has to bring a Chatas in addition. That's a side point, but just make sure that halacha is clear in your head. Now, so therefore the obligation here is to bring an Asham Tali as opposed to a Chatas for both each he and she. Now, before I wrap up here, that actually is not the halacha. There's a machlokas tanaim regarding when one brings an asham talui, and the halacha follows the other Tana, who says there's only an obligation to bring an asham talui where there is iser kavua, where there's a certain element of iser karis floating in the mix somehow in the case. Meaning, your classic case is you have two roommates, they both have midnight snacks in the middle of the night. They go into the refrigerator, and they pull out some iggly jiggly fat that they want to eat. And there's two kinds of fat, chelev and shuman. Chelev is forbidden fat, chiyav karas. Shuman is permitted fat. Okay, so one eats the chelev, one eats the shuman. They don't know who eats what. The next morning, they look in the fridge and say, oh my goodness, someone ate the chelev. Maybe it was me, maybe it was you. So then each of the two roommates now have to bring an asham talui, because they can't bring a chatas, because they don't know who was the one who really ate the chelev. So they bring an asham talui instead. But there, you know that there's for sure Isser in the mix. You know one of these two guys ate some Isser because there was Chalev in the fridge, and now there isn't. So someone did something. We just don't know who. So then Asham Tali, because there's a for sure an element of Isser present in the scenario. Okay? In our case, that's not true. It's 50-50. Maybe everything was kosher and hunky-dory, or maybe it's totally forbidden. There's no certainty that somebody or something in the mix was Asher. There's no Isser Kavua. And therefore, according to that Tana, you don't bring an Asham Tali in that kind of scenario. And that's the din. Halach lamaisa. So halach lamaisa, in our scenario here, they have to be separated, they need to get misafik, but no bringing an asham talui, because there's no certainty, no isser kavua, that there's actually an isser, a forbidden element to this story.